I'm Mark Gandy for CFO Bookshelf. It's that time of year again, the awards season. In this case, for CFO Bookshelf, it's time to look back at my favorite books that I read and listened to in 2023. I do apologize up front. Many books are mentioned, so we do not do a lot of deep dives on each of these titles. Also, if you are in a hurry, I start with the top 10 from top to bottom near the beginning of the show. CFO Bookshelf's favorite books in 2023. That's coming up next. It's been 1 year ago that we did this show, The Best Books of 2022, and one of my favorite research analysts was here in the studio. We call him G2. And by the way, there are about eight or nine other good buddies of yours. They call you G2. So can I just go ahead and keep calling you G2?
That's totally fine.
And then what do you call me?
G1.
G1. So we'll just go at that. G1 on the left, G2 on the right. I could say the best books in 2023. It makes it sound like the best books, but we need to probably say it's my favorite books.
Your favorite books. That's fair.
Is that fair?
Yes.
So do we want to go ahead and get started?
Let's get started. And obviously, the most important question, the first question that people are going to ask or want to ask, and that I want to ask, how many books did you actually read this year?
You asked me that question last year.
You have to start with that.
Why do I have to answer that?
Everyone wants to know. They got to compare themselves to you.
I thought the reason is if we're doing like the top 10 books.
If you only read 10 books and it wouldn't matter. Yeah.
Can I tell you why I don't like to answer that question? It was 2 or 3 years ago. So I'm a founding partner of a national coaching firm, and we have a summit every year in St. Charles, Missouri. I think it was last year or 2 years ago, we had Vern Harnish. We had another influencer, I mean, big time. I actually have one of his books signed. Actually, it was sent to me by another client of mine. And this particular individual, he's up on the stage, and he said, hey, I read 100 books a year. And as I'm listening, I'm sitting in the back row. There's about 200-300 people there. And part of me was just, I was turned off. I was put off by that comment. Why do you think I was? I felt like he was bragging.
That makes sense.
And that's why I don't like to say how many books. And number two, I don't want people to think, oh, I need to read.
You have to read that certain number.
And the answer is no. Right. There's some people that we like to read.
So even though you tend to read around, you know, you hit the century mark each year, you may... That's not necessarily what everyone should have to read every single year to consider themselves, you know, well-read for the year. So I will still ask the question, what is that benchmark that people maybe should be hitting each year?
Well, again, you're using the word should. I think whatever makes sense to you. Early in my career, when I started reading, I was probably reading about one book a month. I was a slow reader. I still am a slow reader. I was reading about one book a month. Now, where did that cadence come from? In the world of reading, there are books I want to read and books I either should or need to read. Early in my career, a lot of those books are based on I needed to read them. When I did my first divestiture of a business, I sold it to two different companies. I didn't know what I was doing. I was doing it in manufacturing, and a guy named Stuart Varner handed me a book and said, Mark, I think this will help you, is The Goal by Goldratt. And Melody Sparrow, around that same time, about a year earlier, she gave me the book Relevance Lost. So it's like, it seemed like when the student was ready, this book would be presented to me, and they came at the right time. And these books were very, very helpful, especially for projects I was working on the time. So that cadence back then was about one book per month. So if some young professional said, I read about one book a month, I'd say that's pretty good, because you're probably going to be taking notes. You're going to be very invested in that book. It's taking you a month to read. When a CEO, I work with a lot of very successful CEOs. A lot of the businesses I've worked with, we've gone from 20 to 100 plus million, and that's not unusual. A lot of these CEOs, they are readers. They're reading about 50 books a year, 40, 50. I got a couple I'm working with now that read a book a week, and they just enjoy doing it. So I think if you are a reader, don't focus on quantity, focus on quality. Does that
That makes sense. So you mentioned the kind of the difference between, you know, need to read books and want to read, and you read a lot of those need to read books. How does a person decide what they should be reading? How do they, you know, split that up?
That is a great, great, great question. I have this framework in some of my one-to-one coaching and mentoring. I have what's called the 1-3-5 rule. And so about every 5 years, I'm repotting myself. If I don't, I'm going to get bored. What I've been doing the past 5 years is not the same things I've been doing the previous 5 years. So number one, to answer that question pragmatically, is what are you doing right now? What is some content that would help you right now in your work right now? But because of the 1-3-5 rule, I'm looking ahead. By the way, one stands for year one of a new cycle. You're going to screw up. You're going to make mistakes. It's going to be like writing left-handed if you are a righty. The three stands for mastery. By the time you started that new five-year cycle in 3 years, you should be at mastery based on this new five-year cycle. Year five, you're ready to do the next 5 year. So I call it the 1-3-5 rule. So on the should, it gets down to, okay, if I'm starting this five-year cycle, what should I be doing right now? What can I be reading right now that's going to be very, very helpful? Let's say you're really into data analytics. I would just go out and find some of the books where there are gaps in your learning. And maybe you're getting frustrated that you're either not fast, maybe there's some accuracy issues. Start there. So I would just start out, where are the gaps right now? But where do you perceive the gaps to be over the next 3 to 5 years if you're using this mental construct that I just described, the 1-3-5 rule?
I think the idea of a five-year plan is a little bit foreign to a lot of people these days. I think that's a great, great idea to start thinking about.
Well, I mean, here's one way to think about it. I thought about doing the 1-2-4 rule because when you go to college, most people are on a four-year plan. Unless you're like me, my first summer around was more like the five-year plan. But most people can relate to four. But to me, five just seems like we live in a rule of 10. So half of 10 is five. So to me, 5 years just makes sense. But hey, if you wanted to say 4 years, that's fine. Go. So when you said that, well, you go to college, or a lot of people go to, you know, school, university, high school is 4 years. So that's my thought process on thinking out more than 1 year.
That being said, are we ready to move on to your tops?
Yes. Top list? And what we're going to do, this is similar to prior years, and I've got this humongous mind map. We're going to start out with the top 10. When we get down to the top 10, we'll talk about honorable mentions. We're going to talk about fiction. We're going to talk about repeats. And then we're going to talk about the books I did not like. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 buckets. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 5 buckets. Excuse me. But we'll start with the top 10. And
before you start on your top 10, what goes into picking those top 10? What made you choose those 10 out of the 100 or so books that you read this year?
Well, even though I say I'm a poet and not a quant, I just did a random generator in Excel and just let's pick these. No, I did not. I did not do that. What I did is I do have a numbering scale for the books I read. No one ever gets a 5. every once in a while, you'll get a five. For example, Open by Agassi. That is a five. Have you read that book?
It's on my list.
It's on that your list. Yep. That will be a five. What else is a five? Boys in the Boat is a five. Have you done that?
Right? I am about three quarters of the way through.
What do you think so far?
I love it.
Wait till you get to the ending. And by the way, there is a reason why that's a five. It's almost like once you stop reading it, you step back. By the way, you need to read the epilogue. You will read the epilogue. And there'll be a reason. Anybody that works in the space of organizational health, this is a must-read book. But if you just want to be inspired, it's a great book. That is a five. But I don't think there are any books that I read in 2023 were five-star books. Now, I do have some 4.75s, 4.5s. I started with those first, and then I just kept paring down until I got, yeah, these were my definitely my favorites. So that's the thought process of picking the top 10. That, by the way, that is a good question. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. Yeah. And by the way, we're not going to leave people in suspense. Maybe the reason I'll never be in charge of an awards show, no drama. We're just going to go ahead and tell you my favorite book of the year. Let It Go, My Extraordinary Story from Refugee to Entrepreneur to Philanthropist. You've heard me talk about this. This is a story of Dame Stephanie Steve Shirley. So her name is Stephanie, but she goes by Steve. There's a story why she goes by Steve. And she is 90 years old as of this past year. At one time, up till about 2 or 3 years ago, top 10 list of female philanthropists, she either had Queen Elizabeth one slot above her or below her. I can't remember, but they were both in the top 10. But Stephanie Shirley, Steve Shirley, and she was on the show. It's one of the, I will never forget that experience. I felt like it was one of the worst interviews I've ever done, because it's the only interview where I had to turn in my questions in advance, because I wanted to have a conversation with her. Right. So even though I kind of cheated, we did start out with the first question, but I was able to deviate a little bit, but I was limited on time and it just wasn't my best, but I'll never forget the conversation. She is a wonderful human being. She's one of 10,000 young children saved from the Nazis during World War II. She's sent to England to live with strangers. She didn't even know the language. She was away from her mother, didn't know where her mother or father was. But yet she comes out of it. She comes out of it a strong person. Her mother and her do eventually unite. She goes to college. She starts the gig economy. We're not talking the 2000s, G2. We're talking the 1960s. We're talking programming. And back then, the 60s, women programmers.
Not happening,
that
probably.
No one does that. Yes, they do. And that's one of the reasons why Stephanie changed her name to Steve, because her husband said, the reason you're not getting your responses back is because you are a woman.
Wow.
So on your letters to these male CEOs, put Steve at the end of your letter. All of a sudden, people said, could you,
that's
could
incredible.
Could you give us a request? Could you give us a quote on this project? So she starts the gig economy. Other women could work from home programming. Again, this is 1960s, 70s, and the company eventually goes public. And I want to say 63, 64, 65 women became instant millionaires because of going public. So took culture very, very, very seriously, very into employee ownership. And she was a pioneer, but just an incredible human being. Married 40 plus years, husband passed away. Her son also passed away. Her words, I don't know if this is a clinical term, but extremely autistic. And she's a lot of the nonprofits she's been a part of related to men and women on the autism spectrum. It is probably, I'd have to say it's the best book I read because I was inspired. I didn't only just read it, I listened to it. And of course, I get to talk to the author. That was my favorite book of the year.
Fantastic number one book. So,
and by the way, at this pace,
yeah, you had a lot to say about that. Hopefully all other 99 don't go that way.
So I'll go fast. Yep. The next one is Number Go Up by Zeke Fox. I love this book because, well, you asked earlier, how do I decide what to read? Well, I know diddly about cryptocurrencies. I mean, I know a little bit.
Does anyone know anything about cryptocurrency?
I mean, I actually do know what.
Now you do.
If someone said, hey, what's Eurythmium? I could actually carry a conversation about Eurythmium, if I'm saying that word correctly. But I didn't know a lot about FTX or Bankman-Fried, the most hated man
right.
in America for a year plus. I just didn't know a lot. I didn't even know what Tether was to reveal my ignorance. I didn't know about some of the side stories. So he writes this book, Zeke Fox writes this book called Number Go Up. And I told him this is going to be a bestseller book in a lot of people's lists. And it has been. It's turned out to be a great book. He is an incredible writer. Each chapter almost could stand on its own. Each chapter could be a great article in The Atlantic. But what was amazing is each chapter kind of went off on this, not a tangent, but there's so many, it's like this big spider web all leading back to FTX and Tether. So if you have not read or listened to it, I would encourage you to listen to it. There's some parts in the book is like, you're kidding, like slave labor in Cambodia. What does this have to do with cryptocurrency? But I feel like Zeke Fox knocked it out of the ballpark.
All right. Next on your list.
The next one on my list is I had never, ever read a book about real estate development. In my first VP position in finance, out of VP position in finance, my employer, we joked that out of petty cash, we created this $40, $50 million real estate portfolio. So early in my career, I knew a little bit about commercial real estate, and I'd never have seen a book or experienced a book about real estate development from beginning to end, especially in a narrative format. There's a book called La Deal, and I'm going to spell it two words, and this is for people in America. L-E and then Deal, D-E-A-L. So La Deal, and it's by Byrne Murphy. And I'll just get to the point. Anything that can go wrong did go wrong. He moves his wife and daughter to France. Can you imagine just moving to France, just out of the blue? It's like, we're moving to France. He started a business, I believe a holding company, that would eventually lead to the construction of the first MacArthur Glen shopping outlet in France. Well, it ended up taking more than 2 years, maybe pushing 3 years, to finally get it constructed. That is a hard country to do business in. This is the, in my opinion, it may be the only book written like this. This is a book that does not exist. I use that term a lot. Has this book been written before? I don't know of another title that's similar in content.
So the next one on your list, The Art of Action. Tell me why this made your top 10.
There was about a 6-7 year period where I read a lot of books on strategy just because I wanted to know. Because as a consultant, I kept hearing a lot about strategic planning. And even in my W-2 life, I think I heard strategic planning brought up once. And so then when I start consulting in the early 2000s, what is this? And it got to be to where, oh, it's a business. That's what it is. You fill out these boxes. And because I have very strong opinions about strategic planning, don't ever pay for it. That's just the biggest waste of money. But that doesn't mean strategy goes out the window. The Art of Action is a book about strategy, and it's looking at a Prussian army many years ago, and Stephen Bungay is the author. By the way, I dropped the ball. We've had an email exchange. He has agreed to be on the show, but when I reached out to him, he was going to be traveling and said, follow up with me in a few months. Well, I never did follow up. But my favorite part of the book, and it's a small part of it, my favorite part of the book is where he talks about friction on any project. He talks about the knowledge gap, the alignment gap, and the execution gap. Those three gaps. The knowledge gap being what should we know, what do we know? And there can be a gap when that can cause friction in a project. Alignment gap is where are we expecting people to be working together? Where is it now? There could be a gap there. And then the execution gap is what were we supposed to get done? What did we get done? And that is in the form of a triangle. And when you put these three together, no wonder there can be all this tension and friction. And so he says friction is a result of one of these three gaps, or it could be two or all three. Again, that's a small piece of it, but this is an excellent book on strategy. Am I calling it the best? No, but it's just a different way to think about strategy. This is not a book you'll read cover to cover fast. I would suggest one chapter a day is not enough. I would read a couple, and it's also good book club material. I would, if any larger organization that has a book club, this is a book where you get five or six people to go through it together. It is outstanding. Senior leadership team, any company that has an SLT or a management team, read it as a group and then go over it. Just pick one quarter. This will be our book for the quarter. I would pick The Art of Action.
Okay, so next book on your list.
I'm talking too much. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Hoover Dam, was it built on time, or did it go over budget in terms of time?
I would assume that it went over budget.
Me too. Would you have assumed that it went over budget monetarily or under?
Over.
Me too.
Okay.
We're on the same page.
Yes.
So Hoover Dam, the project plan called for it to be completed in 7 years. It got completed in 5 years.
Wow.
Now even though you are one of my favorite research analysts on the team, you did not get me this number. The budget for Hoover Dam was $49 million. It came in under. Now, the book, How Big Things Get Done, the first couple of chapters, very entertaining, fun. By the way, this is a book, I did listen to it. I do plan on reading it. I do want to reach out to this author. I loved this book. Project managers, I think we had Gene Kim on earlier a few weeks ago. I call him the father, the godfather of the DevOps movement. I would love for someone in DevOps to go through this book, especially those who are project planners, project managers. This is a fun read. It's why projects go late or go over budget. And there's a psychology behind reasons why projects can go over. I'm a big fan of the architect Frank Gehry. He also has a masterclass on masterclass.com. Highly recommend it. All of his projects, are they over budget or under?
Probably under.
They're under. Good guess. Yeah. Good guess. Because of time, we need to go on, but how big things get done is a fun, in this case, I listened to it. I really enjoyed it. There is an entertainment component to it, but it's also very informative and it's instructive. So again, excellent book. What goes into picking a top 10 book, the other thing I missed, it's when I'm surprised. I was not expecting, this looks interesting. So I started listening to it. It's like, oh, this is really good. And I was even recommending this book to other people as I got through chapter 3, chapter 4. So thumbs up on this book.
Okay, so we are on to number six, Symphony of Profound Knowledge.
The Symphony of Profound Knowledge, again, I wish we had more time. If you have never read a book, either by Deming, and by the way, if you've read a book by Deming, all power to you. In my opinion, he's not a great writer. So I recommend reading books about him. And one of the best books, it's relatively new. It's called The Symphony of Profound Knowledge. My opinion, every person, I hate to use the word should, but I think every business student, any lifelong learner of business should read a book either by or about Deming. If you've never read one, by or about, start with this book. Start with The Symphony of Profound Knowledge. You'll learn a lot about Deming the man. You'll learn a lot about Deming the 14 management points. This book has a strong theme of holistic thinking, which, by the way, for CEOs, I am not going to give this book to a CEO. But the book I will give them, and I have, is the book called A Whole in One. Whole is spelled W-H-O-L-E. It's a thin, short book. You can read it in about 2 hours. But the bigger version is The Symphony of Profound Knowledge. I really like what he talks about, where managing is a performing art. We also find out that Deming is very practical. You don't need to be a manufacturer to enjoy Deming. The story of Mattress Mack. He's the famous furniture store guy down in Houston, Texas. He used to go to these Deming four-day workshops that Deming used to hold when he came back to America to start consulting after his work was done in Japan. And Mattress Mack went. And he goes back and starts applying what he learned from Deming. One of the things he applied was no more sales commissions. And people thought, you're nuts. You're crazy. It turns out that sales even went higher. Sales went up. And the salespeople actually started making more money because then they instituted profit sharing. By the way, I do have the book written by Mattress Mack. And unfortunately, he only talks about Deming in about 4 or 5 pages. I wish you'd have talked about him more. But again, this is a good book. It's you're going to have to think through it. There will be parts of this book. It's a slog. But you know what? Skim through it. I didn't, but it's okay to skim parts if they get a little bit dry.
Right.
But there are parts of this book, it's extremely pragmatic. Some of the chapters are very short. So excellent book. It's in my top 10.
Okay. Next one on your list. Tell me about this next one.
The name of the book is called Men and Rubber, The Story of Business. To me, it's the Harvey Firestone book or the Harvey Firestone story. I want to read a quote, and this is excellent. So Harvey Firestone, I just love reading some of these early 20th century CEOs. What were they thinking? Were they evolved? Were they just as intelligent as today's CEOs? And to me, there is nothing, I mean nothing new under the sun. This guy sounds like Peter Drucker. Listen to this line. This is Harvey Firestone. And by the way, this is a guy who started with about 10 employees and got to 17,000 employees in a pretty short period of time. He says, a business which exists without a reason is due for an early death. The single reason for the existence of any business must be that it supplies a human need or want. And if my experience is worth anything, a business which has this reason for its existence we bound in the end to prosper if thought be put into it. Thought, not money, is the real business capital. And if you know absolutely that what you are doing is right, then you are bound to accomplish it in due season. That sounds like Peter Drucker, but he wrote that about 50 years before Drucker wrote his first book. He says having a surplus, and I laughed at this because when you read it, I just highlighted it, but then you get to the part where they almost ran dry, almost went bankrupt. It's like, oh yeah, having a surplus is the greatest aid to business judgment that I know. And there were some times where they were hemorrhaging cash. And it's an excellent book. The parts of it were fun. Him, Edison, Thomas Edison, and Henry Ford, they would go on these excursions every year. It'd be in rural areas, very remote rural areas. And we're talking like weeks. One time the president, I don't know if it was McKinley or Cleveland, that actually was on one of their jaunts for about maybe 2-3 days. So they'd have some interesting dignitaries that would come along for maybe a few days. But that part was enjoyable to read about as well until it finally had to come to an end. I think it may have been Edison. He got to the point to where health-wise, he just couldn't do it anymore. But those three were very close and tight. It was a neat relationship. But that again, I was not expecting this to be a great book. And this is one I read, and I really enjoyed it.
Great to hear from that one. And then we have a couple more left here. We have Around the Corner, Around the World. What made this get on your list?
This one, we did a podcast. When I say we, I did reach out to Bob Rosenberg. Bob was the 40-year CEO of Dunkin' Donuts. He graduates from college. Imagine graduating from college, and your dad says, son, you're now the CEO of my company, and you're going to have men that you'll be working with. And by the way, it was mostly men. You're going to have guys that are 20, 30 years older than you that you're going to be responsible. They will be accountable to you. But he took that business. I think at one time, Dunkin' Donuts had a 96% brand recognition, not just in the U.S., but globally. So I love this story. It's a rags to riches story. I do like reading books by CEOs. This felt like, I sensed this book was like a mini MBA. Bruce Reed, who is an occasional co-host, that was really his term. It's like it's a mini masterclass of corporate governance. And I thought he was so true. I'm not going to spend more time on it because, like I said, we did a show on it. And this is, again, one of my favorite books of the year.
All right. And number nine?
Number nine. This is an interesting book. I wish I knew how to classify this book. It's called Maxims for Thinking Analytically. The author is Dan Levy, which, by the way, he's agreed to be on the show. Again, I've dropped the ball on him, just scheduling, but he will be on the show. I love this book. So in the book, there's a number of maxims, again, for thinking analytically. Just to give you a flavor, one of them is to think in extremes. I mean, in deep extremes. And did you know, since I've read this book, I've actually been applying some of this, especially when I'm talking. I'm in a lot of meetings with people, and I'll come up with extreme cases as we're trying to solve a problem. And it's a starting point.
Well, so you go to the extreme, and then you work yourself back.
Exactly. Now, that's maxim number one. Maxim number two is start with a very, very, very simple case. So you can either start with a very simple extreme, you know, on the far left, or extreme on the far right. And at some point, you're going to get to a point to where, oh, here is our solution. There's a chapter, you think it's common sense, but think in probabilities. And I was in a meeting today, most of the day, we were talking about budgeting. And I've always believed this. One thing I hate about budgets is they come down to a bottom line, one number. And I'm just thinking, what's the probability of you hitting that number? What's your confidence level that would be within some number and this number? Give me a range. So the chapter on thinking and probabilities is very, very good. The whole book, again, has an entertainment feel to it, but it's also very pragmatic. These are things you can take with you in everyday life. So again, I wish I knew how to classify this book. Is it a thinking book? Is it a Dan Pink type book? It's hard for me to classify this type of a book, but again, I really liked it. I have a feeling I'll be returning to this book. Well, if I interview the author, I will be rereading it.
All right, so we have one book left, and this one doesn't quite fit into the kind of the genre that we've been hitting on your other books here. So tell me about this last one.
I just read it on a whim. I'm trying to figure out how this got onto my radar. The name of the book is Counterfeit Gods. I do like C.S. Lewis. There's a very specific reason I like him. He is an analytical thinker. He's the kind of person I would have liked. To me, in his space, he is the Peter Drucker of his space during the time he lived. The guy, the author, Timothy Keller, in my opinion, is a modern-day C.S. Lewis, even though I don't know if Timothy Keller has ever written any fiction. By the way, I think he's deceased, unfortunately. This book, Counterfeit Gods, has 2,400 ratings. The average rating, 4.8.
Wow. Okay.
4.8. Wow. So I want to read this quote from Madonna that's in the book. She says, "My drive in life is from this horrible fear of being mediocre. And that's always pushing me. Because even though I've become somebody, I still have to prove that I'm somebody." By the way, somebody both times is an uppercase. "My struggle has never ended, and it probably never will." She goes on to say, "I'm more of an addict to not being mediocre." And that is one example of I would call it an addictive personality. It's a form of idolatry. So this book, I read it because out of interest, and it's probably my number one book. I gave this book as a gift for Christmas to some people I care very much about. It's an excellent, excellent book. It's piercing. It is not an easy read, and I dare you to read it. Good luck getting through it, because you're going to be judging yourself. You're not going to be belittling yourself. You're just going to be looking in the mirror and say, does something need to change here? So, and I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, it's in my top 10. You find this title intriguing?
It's on my list to read. So I'll be one of those people looking in a mirror, I'm sure.
I have a lot of honorable mentions.
24 to be exact.
You've counted them. Well, I do have them segregated. So I had a number of podcast guests, and I do want to give him a high five. I don't know if he listens to the show. Ron Baker has been on the show 3 times. He sent me a copy of Time's Up. By the way, I just spoke with someone that just read his book. I think it was just happenstance, and he saw a quote from me in that book. But Time's Up is probably, if I were to look at all the books I read, I've taken more notes on Time's Up than any book that I read. I have a ton of notes, and it's really a fun book, because when you start stepping back and see what he pulled together, I mean, there's a lot there. I almost wish I could have been his editor, because maybe there's too much, but this is a brilliant book. I fear that some people in the accounting community may have picked it up and given up on it. If you're one of those people, stop it. Pick it back up and read it from cover to cover. It is a fantastic book. The nuggets are just so rich. He gets a 10 out of a 10 just for his research. He told me how long it took to research the book. I would have guessed it would have taken 3 times that. Robert Caro, who took 7+ years to write some of his books, like The Power Broker.
Yep.
I think The Power Broker took maybe close to 10, 15 years to do the research. I might be off there, but he's the Robert Caro of when he writes. I mean, there's just so much research that goes into it. The next book is The Accidental Business Nomad. That book was a fun read. We've had the author on the show, so I'm not going to get into it. Fair Pay is a great book. Love the author. He is fantastic. And he's someone continue to stay in touch with. Great guy. Tractor Wars. This book came out of nowhere. It was a fun read. That's a book that's not been written. And I mean, it literally is in a class of its own. Family Reigns. Now, we interviewed a guy who wrote a book about Anheuser-Busch, but what led to this was the book Family Reigns, The Extraordinary Rise and Epic Fall of an American Dynasty by Billy Bush, one of the kids of the late Anheuser-Busch III. And by the way, Billy Bush said, yes, I'll be on your show. And he said, want to do it this week? I was like, no, I need
a little bit of time to research.
Well, he'd never follow up. So 2 weeks later, yeah, I can be on. Want to do it this Friday? No, Billy, I need. And then happened three. Finally, that's enough. So yep. I found another author. But it was a good book. This is more of a regional book for people who've grown up in and around St. Louis. I think Family Reigns it's very interesting. There are going to be some insights you get that you've not read from any other books about Anheuser-Busch. I enjoyed it. The Little Book of Boards, that author was on the show. I enjoyed it because I learned some things I'd not ever had thought about from a board perspective. So those are in my honorable mentions who were interviewed. I'm just going to go through my list real quickly. This will be in the show notes. We have in the management genre, The Giants of Sales. I wrote just a quick note. I loved it. If you work in sales management, get this book and hand it out. Give it. It's really the history. It's a great anthology history of the sales management movement. There's even a whole section in there of Dale Carnegie. It's a fun read. If you like history, but if you also like sales management, this is a great, I loved this book. It came close to being my top 10, but it ended up being, nope, it's probably more in my top 15, but I love the book. Again, it has a strong historical component to it. It's hard to put down. Gold Rats, Rules of Flow was written by the daughter of the late Eli Gold Rat, project management. I love the book Outbound Air. So there are books I like to read about every year. In my opinion, every business student should be exposed to what's called the requisite organization. I don't like that term. I prefer the term requisite thinking. But Elliot Jacks, who innovated the concept of the requisite organization, it's all based on more observation versus science. He is an organizational psychologist, the late Elliot Jacks. He came up with what's called these stratums. Stratum one, let's say you work in a warehouse. What's your time span of thinking if you work in a warehouse? It's probably from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Eight to five.
I've been there.
What if you are a supervisor? What's your time of thinking?
The same? Or are you looking for a different answer?
Well, yeah, I don't want to lead the witness, but I would say, well, now correct me if you disagree with me, but I would think at least 1 to 2 weeks out, because who does the scheduling?
Supervisor, probably.
So they're looking anywhere from a week to 2 weeks out. And then what about his or her manager?
Then we're kind of looking further out, probably.
Yeah. And then you get to like buyers. Those people, they're maybe looking a quarter
seasons
out.
Maybe, yeah.
I think in some examples of Jack's writing, the CEOs may be stratum three. Now, these stratums go out to either stratum 8 or 9. And I have always assumed I would put Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos in that highest stratum where you're looking about 50 years out. This is a little bit controversial because you can't prove it, but it makes sense. You don't want a CEO leading your organization who's just thinking 3 to 4 years out. By the way, this is a skill. It's a teachable skill to get from one stratum to the next. So I bring all this up just to provide some context to one of my honorable mentions. It's called Outbound Air, A-I-R. Outbound Air. It's written in the format of a novel, fiction. And if you don't know anything about the requisite organization, I would start with this book called Outbound Air. So I do try to read a book on requisite thinking every year. This just happened to be the one. I read a couple and I read this one and I do recommend it. The other management book, you know, I've read parts of this, but I've never read it from cover to cover. And I found out why, because it's pretty dry. Okay. It's Managing for Results by Drucker. I will say this, the chapter on cost is probably the best writing I've ever read. We were talking about finance earlier. This is an exception. Now, you can't go out and apply his thinking, but his thinking on cost is the best I have ever read. And I believe this was written back in the 50s, maybe 60s. There are three books in what I call the, what I would call Applied Drucker, the pragmatic, the practical, the effective executive is one of them. Managing for Results is another. But this goes under my honorable mention. It is a slog. I would just say, if you've not ever read Drucker, this could be a starting point and give yourself permission to skim if you want to. But again, it is an honorable mention. Let me jump ahead. Upside Down Management. We did a show on it by John Timpson. Time to Make the Donuts is by the father of Robert Rosenberg of Dunkin' Donuts.
So very cool. So you had
fascinating. Okay. I did read the book by Walter Isaacson, Elon Musk. I felt compelled. It's like, okay, I want to know more about this person. And this is not a show. We're not controversial.
Right.
I'm going to save my opinions to myself about Elon, the man. Someone else can do the judging. I won't. I'll just say, I do admire and appreciate the intelligence, the excellence. And he's one of the original PayPal mafia. PayPal, that part of the book seemed to go fast. I said I don't give 5 stars in my list. But for Amazon, I did give it 5 stars. I did. Also under the category of autobiographies, bios, and memoirs, I give myself permission to read one sports book. Sure. And I only get one because why do I only allow myself one?
Because they're addicting?
They're addicting. If I had it my way, I'd read 100 books a year sports. But I read Swagger by Jimmy Johnson. And he did not disappoint. If you love football, now you may hate the Cowboys. You may hate Miami as a college football team during his era. I still loved the book. It was great storytelling. There's a human element in it that he gets into his sons. One of them had a lot of issues. I won't give it away if you want to read or listen to it. I would love to just sit down and talk to him for about 10 minutes, just talking about family and football. Those two things don't seem to go together. And I'm amazed that families that can stay together for 40, 50 years, it's hard. And the father-son relationship, it was not easy. I'll just leave it at that. But I enjoyed the book, at least in terms of Amazon ratings.
A 5. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had one book in the history and narrative nonfiction section here.
Yeah, again, because of time, I won't talk too much about it. It's called The Wager, A Tale of Shipwreck, Mutiny, and Murder. My recommendation on The Wager is before you read it, if you're intrigued, again, I love this book, I would go to YouTube and do a search on the 60 Minutes segment with the author. It's excellent. I watched it after I read the. When I read books that I love, I'll go to YouTube looking for interviews because I want to learn more about the author. And that's when I found that they'd done a 60-minute segment. It's based on a true story. It reads like fiction. It's narrative, nonfiction. Author knocks it out of the ballpark.
Okay, last couple here on the honorable mentions list.
I mentioned Ron Baker a few minutes ago. One of the few podcasts that I do listen to, it's called The Soul of Enterprise. These guys are phenomenal. They are outstanding. They're witty. They're smart. They don't talk down at you. I just love listening to them. I feel like I'm part of their little family. And they have interviewed Peter Robinson. In fact, they've interviewed, I think, all but one of the Ronald Reagan speechwriters, and one of them is Peter Robinson. Peter Robinson was the author, or I would say the lead author, writer of the Tear Down This Speech, Tear Down This Wall speech by Ronald Reagan. And he writes a book called Snapshots from Hell. And I finally got around to reading it. I'd had it on my bookshelf for a couple of years. I thought, I'm going to read this. It's out of print. It's a hardback. And it's his story of when he went back to college. So he was a speechwriter for Reagan for 7 years. He could have kept writing for another year, but it's like, no, I want to go back to school and get my MBA. I think his original degree, and Ron will probably correct me if he's listening, I want to say his first degree was in economics, but I could be wrong. But he goes back to school, gets MBA at Stanford, and he calls himself a poet versus a quant. So really, it's a story of quants versus the poets. He's a poet, and he struggles through all the quantitative aspects of the MBA program. I would love to talk to him. It would probably be a 15-minute interview, but I believe this is a book that's still relevant today. It's not just a book for the time period that he wrote it. And the last one, and this falls under human interest, is The Ride of Her Life. This is a story of Annie Wilkins. She's about 60, 61 years old, and she's a widow, and she ends up selling her home in Maine, and she takes her horse from Maine to California.
Wow.
And it took her about a year or so.
And I'm assuming that she made it.
She made it. There are some ordeals. There are some issues. There are some obstacles. By the way, there were some parts where a truck would truck her from point A. I think she's in, for example, Pennsylvania. And someone drove her from Pennsylvania to Kentucky because she had an ailing horse. So, I mean, that still counted. But she still, you know, got from one point of the country to the other. And it is a neat, it is a feel-good story. And there are a couple of parts where the blood pressure rises a little bit. It's like, is she going to get out of this situation? There's a part that I just wanted to jump into the book and strangle somebody on her behalf. It was a fun book. It's called The Ride of Her Life.
Okay, so this is going to be my favorite category, being a former English major, have an English degree. Category fiction. So I guess really first question here before we go into the books that you read that were in the fiction category, what's your strategy for picking more fiction?
I'll go back to want versus need or should. So I'm going to interchange either need or should. So that's one category or want to. And sometimes there's some disconnect between the two. They can be at odds with one another. But when it comes to fiction, I'm very serious about what should I. So for example, a year ago, I read my first, well, actually not my first, Of Mice and Men would have been my first Steinbeck book. But I read probably one of my, it's now probably my top 8, 9, 10 books, East of Eden. It is a great, great book. And that was on my, it'd been on my list for about probably 10 years. Like, I think I'll finally read it. So I will look at the classics first. And there was a period in my, I want to say 20 years ago, I went through a period of reading a lot of Dickens, and that fell under the category I should. So part of my strategy is I'll start with books that I think are very important, that are worth reading. And then the other half is There are times you need to let your brain shut down, but I still want to listen to something. Right. And that's where it will just be pure entertainment. So for about half of these books on my fiction are what I call the should, and the others are just, they're just pure sure, entertainment. Sure. Pure, I mean, not Vince Flynn entertainment, but close to it.
I have a good friend of mine who is very, very analytical, and he's told me recently he doesn't like reading fiction because he feels like he's not being productive with his time. So what would you say to people that have that mindset, that think that way and think they can only find production from, you know, reading some of the other books, say, that you've even had on your list?
I would say I used to be just like you 30 years ago because I didn't read a lot of fiction, and just something just clicked, like, just read some fiction. Now, I always liked Clive Cussler when I was a kid, and that continued even into some of my public accounting years. I love Clive Cussler, but that's about the all the fiction I read. And I don't know if that advanced my intellect any or not. So it's a good question, but it's for me, it's hard to answer because I don't want to be the one saying you should. I don't have that type of an answer.
Sure. Well, I have one more question, but I'm going to save it for after you go through your list here. So go ahead and tell me about your fiction that you read this year.
I've been told that you should never read a play. When I started reading Shakespeare, someone said, "You're an idiot. You don't read Shakespeare." And by the way, speaking of, one way to read Shakespeare is there's a couple, I don't know their first names, the Lambs, L-A-M-B-S.
Yep.
And they've taken
No Fear Shakespeare.
They've taken Shakespeare and they put it in a narrative format. And it is just, oh my gosh, it's a great way to read Shakespeare. But someone told me years ago that I used to work with, he says, you don't read, watch Shakespeare. And it could go with Arthur Miller, but All My Sons by Arthur Miller is, oh my gosh, you talk about a book where it's not a feel-good story. You will leave that book thinking, who is in the right? Who is in the wrong? This is good book club material. Number one book, I'd heard about it, All My Sons by Arthur Miller. Highly recommend it. Number two, now this is just if you like Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, you'll love The Lincoln Highway, a novel. That may be my favorite fiction of the year, The Lincoln Highway. It's just a fun, you forget what's going on around you. It is a fun read. Have I mentioned that book to you?
If you did, I can't recall.
The other book is what I would call an intellectual read. It's called The City of Thieves. It takes place during, I can't remember if it's World War I or World War II, but there are two men in Russia. They're going to be sentenced to death because if you stole back then, that could be a death sentence. So the way they get out of it is I think one of the generals, he has a daughter getting married and they need eggs for a cake. So the wedding's going to be in a few months. Go find eggs. Your life will be saved. It is a really addicting story. It has a good ending. I like the ending. It's called City of Thieves. Highly, that's a 5-star book, at least inside Amazon. I'll go through these quickly. The Four Winds. I've always wanted to read more about the Great Depression and especially the Dust Bowl era. The Four Winds is excellent. I think I brought this up in a recent podcast, but The Four Winds is a great book. I don't know if I'm considered maybe one of the avatars for this author, but I still enjoyed it, which then led me to read The Grapes of Wrath. Also during the Dust Bowl. Very depressing, but I felt like my mind was more prepared to read it after reading The Four Winds. Both books are depressing, but I left those books thinking, would I be like some of the people that were, I mean, they treated other people like animals. Would I have been that way? I don't know. I hope I would have been one of the good guys, but there may be a time in our lives where could there ever be a Dust Bowl type era, an era where you got 30%+ unemployed. And I just think this is healthy reading because I wanted to try to understand what it was like to live back then. Reading it on the printed page doesn't come close, but at least wanted to get a sense what was going on back in the 1920s, the 1930s. The other couple of books, this falls under the category of fun. Some fiction I like when I watch movies, I don't watch a lot of comedy. I don't watch a lot of feel-good movies. I like intense drama. A good example of that would be Crimson Tide.
Great movie.
One of my favorite movies. So The Running Man is outstanding. There was a movie made on it. It's terrible. It had Arnold Schwarzenegger. The ending is not the same. Richard Bachman is the author originally, but it's really Stephen King. And it's a great book. I was impressed with it. No Country for Old Men is, you talk about intense. It is a very intense book. I'll just let you look it up. Again, No Country for Old Men. There's been a movie made on it, and I think it was a hit, if I'm not mistaken. I think there may have been some awards won by one or two of the actors.
I believe so. I don't think I ever watched it, but I knew it made some awards.
I will never watch it after.
A little too violent?
Yeah, exactly. It was too violent. I did read in two sittings, even though I would give the book a 3 out of 5 stars, I still enjoyed The Catcher in the Rye. That's good book club material. You get to the ending, you've got questions. It's good to ask. So I did have to go. I went to Goodreads, read a lot of what people thought about the ending. I would rather ask real people or people that I could talk to, got instant feedback, but I read it. And then the other book I read is Eye of the Needle, a novel. And it's excellent read. That particular author, I started reading him last year. He is a great, great, great author. Eye of the Needle, a novel, excellent. And by the way, it's been made into a movie as well. It's about 50 years old, but a good book.
So do you have your 2024 fiction mapped out for yourself, or is it going to be kind of a figure it out as you go?
I have some rough ideas, but again, I'm not done yet. There will be a couple of classics, but I'm not there yet.
Okay, so last category, your dislike category. Why?
Why?
What put these books on your list? Well, what usually
like,
was?
I didn't like them.
Okay.
I didn't like them.
But you still read all of them, is that correct?
I did read them from cover to cover. And is this where you ask me, well, why did you keep reading them?
Exactly.
I was compelled to finish them based on other people who said these are good books. So maybe it's just trying to find out why do other people like these books. I do like David Halberstam mostly. I've read several of his books. The 50s is a long book. I started it and was like, David, I give you the benefit of the doubt. And it's well written. It's well researched. I just couldn't get into it, which is odd because I do like history. This is fiction. I hated this book. It's by Sinclair Lewis, Babbitt. That's a case where I'd read about it. I'm a business person. I'm a finance person. So I do like finding there are a handful of business centric novels written in the 1900s, or I would say the 20th century from 1910 to 1950. The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit falls under that category. Babbitt, is I hated it. It's like this main character is a creep, and I just hated it. So one, it doesn't even get one star,
sure.
Not even a half a star. I would love to hear someone that's read it or listened to it. And if you have a different opinion, I would love to know, just let me know on LinkedIn. And don't worry, I'm not going to criticize you. I'm going to tell me what you liked about it. I just did not like it. I do like Ryan Holiday. I like mainly his newsletters. You talk about someone who reads deeply and widely. The Tiger is one of his favorite books in the Farnham Street community. The Tiger is, a lot of people like that book. Okay, I guess I'll read it. I did not like it. It's a little bit of a slog to get through. And again, it's the writing is well done. The research is well done. I feel like I invested my time unwisely. This one may be an unpopular, and it has nothing to do with political reasons. A Hillbilly Elegy. I didn't like it. I shouldn't say I didn't like it. I like the author. I like where he's coming from. I'd give it a 3. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. But it goes in this list because there are a lot of people that really love the book. I'm not in that category. I find it interesting. I grew up in a rural area as well, maybe not as dire as his situation. So I can kind of relate to where he's coming from. He grew up in a bad family situation. Good for him for life turning out well for him. Just didn't really care for the book. Again, didn't hate it, but didn't love it either. I did read another Steinbeck book, Cannery Row. I hated it. It's a 1. I don't recommend it. If you like Steinbeck, don't read Cannery Row. Now, if you like it, I want to know what you think. To me, it's one big Seinfeld book. It's a book about nothing. It's like, I don't get it. The Rise and Fall of H&H Bagel. This book was written by a marketing guy. I think he was just trying to figure out, let me try to make some money. H&H Bagel is mentioned on either 1 or 2 Seinfeld episodes. This book had potential. So I was hooked because of the title. Of course, I love Seinfeld. And this book fell on its face. It did not execute well. It could have. It had potential. It just didn't make it. So that's my best Roger Ebert on that. And then there's a book, a client recommended it to me, just at a 0. It was fluff, waste of time, don't recommend it.
And that rounds out your books of 2023.
You are listening to CFO Bookshelf, lifelong learning for financial leaders. And now back to our host, Mark Gandy.
So what were your favorite books in 2023? I would like to know. Just drop me a line on LinkedIn. By the way, if you click on the link to the show notes from wherever you listen to this show, you will find another category we did not cover, repeats, books I reread in 2023. We need to call this a wrap. I'm Mark Gandy for CFO Bookshelf.